You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Was that time of the show where I get to share with you amazing people doing amazing work in our community. And one that's come across my desk and been suggested to me is to sit down and talk with Jacob Leo Skilling, who heads up the Broken Movement Trust. So, Jacob, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you, Simon. I appreciate it.
Oh, look, it's great to have you on. I find it incredibly informative, but actually mainly inspirational to talk to people like yourself. So a lot of listeners won't know much about the Broken Movement Trust. That might be presumptuous. Actually, I should rephrase that. I am not an expert. The listeners may all know about you, but tell us a bit about yourself. This trust, I know it particularly works in the mental health space for men, I believe, but you're the expert. Tell us about this amazing organization.
Oh, I wouldn't know if I'm an expert at anything, but I'd definitely give it a go. Katangi te titi, katangi kaha tangi o ki hei ti hei mauri ora, ko rauta te waka, purirangi te tangata, waipa te awa, ko turangi nui kawa te moana, ko Ngāti Porou, rawa ko Ngāti Kanuni, te pana, te iwi, ko Ngāti Pākehā, te iwi. Nō reira, tēnera tātou, tēnera tātou, tēnera tātou katoa. Nō reira, tēnera katoa. Kia ora whānau, e te whānau ko Hakoba Jacob Leo Skilling ahau. Founder of Te Pau Awatewa, the Broken Movement Trust. Yes, so again, I wouldn't say I'm an expert. What I would say is I'm a QBE, qualified by my experiences. What that exactly means is that I have lived it's hard to say, hard to put into words what kind of life I've lived. You know, some people will say it's an incredible life story of change and redemption, and some would say it's a terrible life story of trauma, pain, and despair. I guess it's just how you look at it. For me, I now look at it as, the reason I went through the things I went through is so I could be one of the voices to the voiceless and give hope to the hopeless and open the doorway to healing for individuals or collectives to come into a place which we've created, which is now safe, to give them the ability to open up and overcome trauma that they've gone through in their life. And what that looks like is creating a program or a number of programs for not only Tāne men or rangatahi youth, but also wāhine as well, granted when the funding's there, to give people the opportunity to step into these safe spaces, to learn some tools and coping mechanisms and strategies, but marry it up with what we call a clinical aspect and marry that up with a holistic aspect. Because what I believe is the clinical gives you the understandings of the workings of your emotions and your neurological pathways and your brains and your thinkings that connect to CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. But the holistic is where you find the healing and the growth with inside your body, your emotions, your spirit, and then in turn, your whole whānau, your whole house, your whole friends, your whole group, te whare tapawhā as it will. And that's what I believe personally.
That's amazing. Boy. There are so many things to tease out there. So clearly you actually are working with a range of people. So you mentioned Tāne Rangatahi and Wahine. So obviously for men, younger people, and as you say, where the funding allows. I mean, did it start that broad? I mean, what was the catalyst to have this begin and to work into that mental health space?
I guess it starts as a young Jacob, the wee inner child that was once broken, burned, destroyed, and hurt. He was sexually abused. He was brought up in an environment around gangs, violence, addiction, sexual abuse, domestic violence, in the end foster care, leading on to incarceration in prison of a sentence of 9 years at the age of 18, sentence at 19, serving 7 years of that sentence and another 10 months or so in rehab. And going through everything that I've gone through, including all of that stuff, it's been a journey, one would say, to say the least. I first put a needle in my arm at the age of 14 and 15 years old, on and off using till I was 17 while I was on home detention, and then eventually sentenced to incarceration, which is where I stopped using intravenous, and then leading on to a number of other drugs and alcohol. So throughout my life, just been through it all, done it all, experienced it all, and unfortunately, it's had a massive impact and effect and infliction on my life. However, 2019, I was assaulted and ended up in a coma for 3 days where I flatlined twice, and I had upper facial reconstruction of my jaw, maximilian fracture, and then in my head, I had a brain injury, blood clot, and flatlined twice. I was lucky to be alive, and I survived that. Going on from that, I end up getting back into drugs and alcohol once I healed a bit, and then I decided to get clean after finding out my first son. And then finding my faith in God. And then one day we had this idea about creating the Broken Movement Trust. A friend of my sister-in-law had mentioned she wanted to do an event fundraiser for mental health. And obviously I've always been an advocate for mental health because my best friend had poor choice of words, had died by suicide in the prison cell above me, and that really affected me. My granddad had died by suicide, and a number of other friends, including myself, with many attempts and depression that I've faced with, and the adversities that I've been faced with, and even in younger years trying to do the same thing at the ages of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, my mum and my mum and my father and stepfather can recall times where I was going to jump off large buildings to try that at those ages. So a lot of dysfunction in my brain at those young ages, unfortunately. And then this idea came, so we birthed the Broken Movement through the idea of this fundraiser and turned it into a charitable trust about 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago, give or take. It's been registered for about 3.5, 4 years and fully active in the past 2 years running these programs. So it stemmed and birthed from experience. It stemmed and birthed from pain. It stemmed and birthed from trauma, but it's revolutionized itself into an organization that is able to create spaces for men, women and children to heal. We just completed a PK challenge with Graham Dingle Foundation as a collaborative cooperation with them to bring together Broken Movement and Graham Dingle Foundation with some youth, and it was very fantastic. Went really well without a hitch, and it was awesome. Mainly it was Graham Dingle Foundation, but we bring in our contractors and bring in myself to contribute and marry that up. So that was pretty cool too. But that's, I guess, the gist of it. It's a combination of people that have been broken, who are broken or have healed and are on the journey of healing, and using their experience and skill sets and knowledge and also qualifications now to help other people in need that are screaming out in pain.
Gosh. Well, firstly, thank you for sharing a little bit about your life. I'm actually quite a private person, so when someone like yourself speaks quite deeply about some very profound, hurtful, damaging events in life, I just have enormous admiration, and then doubly so that you speak about it so confidently, but in a way that's actually now to help people. And you used a word a bit earlier, Jacob, a redemption. I mean, you will have seen many people I have in life that, you know, that they've had a terrible life, on top of terrible things, and it breaks them. And yet some people, it looks to me that you're one of these ones that have gone through it, and that's terrible in itself, but you're using it to redeem and help others. And I just think that's so incredible. But again, sorry that, you know, that's had to have happened that way, but you've clearly found your calling. Would that be right to say, you know, you feel this is a way that, you know, you've got mana and leadership now to actually affect change in other people, and I assume you can stand up in front of a lot of them and say, actually, I've been in the shoes you've been, and that must engender quite a positive response from those you work with.
Absolutely, 100%. Again, that's that QBE coming in, qualified by experience. You know, the conversations around our past, our trauma, our pains, even our convictions, our time in prison or rehab, when we deal with people, we share parts of our story. And a lot of people who don't, well, a majority of them who we deal with tend to know who we are, who or heard of us or what we're doing or know a bit of our story, but a lot of them hear this word chief executive of an organization or director of a business. And myself, same, before I stepped into this realm of business or charitable trust or any of that stuff, I used to think, oh, that's a bit scary looking to someone like that with that title. So when they come in and then we speak from our hearts and we speak just like them, normal. Like there's no separation. There's no, I'm better than you because I've got a title. It's we're equal, no matter who you are, where you come from, what you've done. And we share our story. And then straight away, people think, oh, he's exactly the same as me. Or, oh, I'm going through that. Oh, I've been through that. And straight away, they're willing to open themselves right up and release all the mama, all the hurt, all the pain, all the hara into our groups and release it and let go of it. And then that creates healing in itself, because to talk about something is to release something. To leave it pent up and bottled up is to create anger, frustration, embarrassment, guilt, being ashamed of something. Where, you know, things happen in our life, but if we hold on to them in that way we look at them, in that perception or what society's taught us or that judgment of others, we're going to continue down the same path. We're not going to stop and turn and go, actually, I don't have to keep going down this path. I can start this path. And you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one single step. And what that looks like is, doesn't matter how far down that path you've gone, you can always make the decision to stop, reflect and say, hey, this ain't the right way. I'm going to go this way. For instance, the matanaro, you know, the mask or the hidden mask. So I used to wear a hidden mask in prison, right? I pretended to be someone I wasn't because it was my safety network to protect me. So I was violent, I was aggressive, I was angry. However, most people liked me because I was quirky, bubbly, and ADHD, and I had no control around my impulses, so I'd do stuff off the bat and be quite funny. Even the prison staff loved me because I was out the gate. And I wore masks to protect myself, right? I falsified identity because of the situation I was in. Much like in life, we wear these masks to protect ourselves because we don't want people to know in a pain and a hurt or what we've done or what we've been through or what's occurred. But the minute that you're transparent and you're open and you release that, it all comes out. And a goal of ours on our programs is to make sure that every person cries. And everyone goes, why? And I said, because I love it. And they go, why do you love it? And I said, because it's healing. It's healing. It really is. Tears are healing. They have healing power. They release toxins through your body. That's the whole point of them. You know, it's a good thing. You feel good after you cry, whether you're grieving, whether you're happy, whatever you're going through. When you cry, you feel good. You feel exhausted sometimes, but you feel good.
I can relate to that as someone who hates crying. I really do. But it is, as you say, quite profound and healing when one does. And look, I just love what you're saying about the masks. Because says me to you, I think we all wear masks in different ways. This is not, you know, you've touched obviously on your prison experience. I've been a prison chaplain myself many years ago at the old Mount Eden. And the only reason I quickly share that, because I'm not wanting to, you know, we're not talking about what your amazing work you're doing in the trust. But one of the most profound things for me, Jacob, and probably the most, what I'd say, liminal or life-changing things I ever did, because actually, you go in and you realize that it doesn't matter if the person's behind the bars or in front of them, they're very human. And actually, some guys have gone through hell and back. Now it makes others realize how lucky they are, myself in life. But at the same time, they're just as human. And we all wear masks and we all have our little, I don't know, is it lies and things we tell ourselves? So it's very profound for me. But it's clear that you are bringing, as I say, your mana and leadership and experience. A very hope-filled message, but I just wanted to delve a bit more into your programs. As I looked through some of your website, you draw quite a lot from Te Ao Māori. Do you want to just sort of give us a bit of a flavour of the thought process or the rationale behind what you're doing and how you do it?
Well, I guess it's men who are always consistently attempting and succeeding and dying by suicide. And a lot of the areas in the health system and the prevention of the health system, The issues are that the supply of help that there's kind of invisible. It's not enough out there. And Māori men are extremely at high risk because of the poor health, limited access to the care rate. So I guess our aim is to encourage and focus on well-being, is to introduce tools of healing for the historic or present trauma, if you will, and to provide support to, you know, universal. We work with everyone, but to work with Māori whānau and hapū. And I guess it's those that are experienced, bereaved, or bereaved by suicide. But it's about building and strengthening communities and resilience and providing things within the program that are going to benefit people. You know, we incorporate things like breath work, cold water therapy, eye gaze, primal scream, mud mask, forgiveness letters, and, you know, kaupapa model models of practice, te wharetapa whā, you know, a number of other things that we like to bring into it. Because for me and my belief around what we do, and for us and around our belief in what we do, is not one shoe size fits all. And what that means is what works for you, Simon, might not work for Jacob, but what works for Jacob will work for Joe. What works for Joe will work for Simon. And it's finding what works for each individual and marrying that up into a program where the whole program might not work in that sole purpose of one person, but they could take one thing out of the program that's really going to change their lives and really work for them. I think all parts of it definitely contribute to it. And most people, we've got a 95% success rate around all areas that we've done our surveys with, which is pretty impactful and promising. But allows them to pick and choose which is the best tool that they can use. We prefer them to use all tools, of course. We introduce cacao as a part of the ceremonial purpose, as it's a, you know, as they call it, it's the heart medication, if you will, or a hug and a mug. We incorporate a lot of, things like a share circle, which is, again, that safe space to share. We also incorporate a long-held hug. And that's because, you know, for a lot of people, they weren't hugged enough as children or in general. And again, when you talk about the science or psychology around certain things like tears and like love and like connection and like hugging. I believe it's stated that if you hug for more than 30 seconds, it releases those endorphins or those natural toxins that are feel good pheromone type stuff. And you hold the hug, you squeeze it, and you're in there with your brother and you're holding it. You know, we've had brothers hug, we've had fathers and sons hug, and the tears around it, everyone's crying, but they're crying because they're feeling good, they're healing, and remembering that they might not have got the hug as a child, so now they're getting it now. And it's huge, it's powerful, it's beautiful.
There is something, as you say, profound about that. It's very human, I was going to say. It's a human experience and trying to reconnect people to that. So for you, is this a service across the country, or are you in particular areas at the moment? I mean, how does that sort of operate? Because there's so much need, as you say. I mean, the suicide rates for men, Māori men in particular, it's just heart-rending.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we are universal. We work with everyone, majority Māori, but we work with whoever needs it, because the black dog barks at everyone. It doesn't have a gender diverse, cultural diverse, or bicultural diverse target. It targets everyone. So yeah, we work with everyone, but we are centered here in Ōtautahi, or around Waitaha and Ōte Waipanami, so more the South Island, but mainly here in Christchurch. However, we're looking to expand throughout all of the South Island and eventually up north. Granted, it comes down to support, funds, and also volunteers, or even people coming on board when we have the funds to pay more extra for facilitators to upskill them, and other people that want to contribute to us. We know that we've got the opportunity to become a larger organisation in the mental health realm and supply the support that's needed. However, we also need that support to build that up.
Which makes sense. I mean, we've talked about a massive need. How have you found, as a leader in the space, getting the resources? I don't mean just money. I suspect that's always hard graft. Mm. But in terms of getting the skilled people that you feel you need to help these, well, I was going to say particularly young people, but it's broader than that. I don't know why I keep getting stuck on young people. But, you know, you'll need everyone from your psychologists through to counsellors to people who can just actually be a good kamata or a kuia, who just know how to love and support. Are you able to find these people easily, or is that one of the big challenges in New Zealand at the moment?
I think the more the merrier. You can never have enough, right? But in terms of in this moment, we've got a few there, so we're quite comfortable with what we're able to do, so we've got enough. But we're always looking to expand.
Well, how then to – God, sounds like an interrogation, which it's not meant to be. How do then people get hold of you? If they want to find out more about the Broken Movement Trust, Te Pou Awatea, how do they find you? Like, website, how do they donate, all of this stuff? How do they connect?
Website, social media. We're on all platforms of social media, I think. Yeah, all of them. And your website, obviously, we referred through other clients. In terms of our social media, our reach is phenomenal. Like, if we went on the Broken Movement page right now, in the last 90 days, it's reached 56 million people globally. Our greatest reach on 1 month across three of our pages at the time was over 100 million people globally. So our content reaches a number of people, and we have group chats and things like that too to help out where we can't reach, and kanui face to face.
Gosh, I've gone from being absolutely inspired to now jealous. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I'd certainly encourage listeners to jump onto all your social media. The website's thebrokenmovement.org. And so obviously for those who go there, you'll be able to make contact and support. You gave us such a lovely greeting to start. I wondered, Jacob, if you would be comfortable just to round this little interview out with some final words.
Oh, awesome. I guess one saying that always sticks with me is, be the change you want to see in the world. And what that means is, you know, what you want to see in the world is for you to role model that as much as you can. In Christianity, we say, you know, be Christ-like. We'll never be like that, but you can try. And, you know, regardless, you know, I don't push my faith or anything onto people. I'm not that type of person. But I believe, and I also think that if you look at the pillars of Christianity, the values, you know, love thy neighbor, do not commit adultery, not commit murder. It's not a bad thing. They're all good things. And what Jesus was a good man. So, you know, be the change you want to see in the world, because that's who he was, being the change that he wanted to see in the world and was. So yeah, but again, I don't force that on anyone. I myself am that person. Unapologetically, obviously. And and I appreciate everyone and all their beliefs and their systems, and I support anyone that wants help. I don't judge, I don't go against, I don't stand for. If you need help and support, I'll do my best. We'll do our best, because that's all we can do.
Jacob, thank you so much. As I keep saying, it's actually incredibly inspiring to talk to you, and I just wish you and all your team well. It's just such an important mahi that you are involved with here. So bless your work. So thanks for your time.
No, thank you, Simon. I appreciate it. You take care, mate. Have a good rest of your day.
So that was Jacob Leo Skilling, who heads up the Broken Movement Trust.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.